You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by the folks at IvyHoopsOnline.com. I'm your host, Peter Andrews, and I am coming to you tonight, Thursday, February 25th, with a glorious panel of Ivy basketball experts who are here to break down. There's only two weekends left in the regular season, and we're going to get right to it. But let's introduce the panel. First, as always, my co-host, the editor-in-chief of Ivy Hoops Online, Mike Tony. Mike, what's good?
Great to be with you, Peter. It's kind of dark on the East Coast right now and snowy, but the sun is shining over your head, so great to bask in your warmth right now.
It is 75 degrees and sunny here in Berkeley, California. I prefer it here. We're joined by the founder of Ivy Hoops Online, Ian Halpern. Ian, what's going on?
Hey, Mike. Tough start. Hey, Peter. Good to be back. How are you doing?
I'm good. And we're joined by Toothless Tiger himself, writer for IvyHoopsOnline.com. It's George Clark. George, how are you?
I'm fine, and it's great to be with you.
I'm sure it is. After all, last weekend was good to your Princeton Tigers, and we're going to get right into it. It was a big showdown at Jadwin Gymnasium, the Death Star, on Friday evening. The Yale Bulldogs come into town undefeated, and they leave defeated as Princeton pulled off the win, drawing them even in the loss column with Yale. So Yale at 9-1, Princeton 8-1, and we'll get a little bit later to Columbia, floating around at 8-2 behind them. But the show on Friday night belonged to the Tigers, who pulled out. I don't want to say pulled out, because I felt like they controlled that game wire to wire. George, let's start with you. What are your impressions of how the night went for the Tigers?
It was not wire to wire. In the first 15 minutes, Yale built a six-point lead, 27-21. I'll remember it well. Just prior to that point, Kennedy came into the game and scored on a very, very tough behind-the-back layup, which Noah Savage, the color analyst on the IL or the WPRB broadcast, described as the best individual play he had ever seen beneath the basket, and it electrified the crowd. But at 27-21, Kennedy hit two threes and then blocked a Mekhi Mason layup, which eventually resulted in a Henry Caruso dunk, giving Princeton its first lead, a lead they never surrendered. To close out the half, Princeton went 18-2 to take a 10-point lead. And effectively, as it turned out in retrospect, that ended the game, although it certainly went back and forth a little bit in the second half. But it was a great night, a great crowd, and Princeton did what they had to do at home, and they've done it at home all year. And heading into tomorrow night, Princeton is confident, but certainly not taking anything for granted.
Mike, do you concur with George's analysis of the Princeton performance?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very much in line with what we've seen all season. It's almost like a kind of a composite of Princeton's best points. You get Devin Kennedy coming through early this time in the clutch to, you know, as George said, break that 27-21 early deficit. And, you know, you got the point distribution that you're looking for. It was also a reflection on how Yale's shooting has really cooled off after a torrid start at home. Now that Yale is really starting to hit the road, as we, you know, kind of indicated early on, six of the last eight games for Yale being on the road in league play, you know, they're starting to cool off, and I think Princeton was, you know, is easily the best team in the league to take advantage of that. You know, Princeton's the hottest team in the league right now. They finally got the first slot in our Ivy Power rankings for the first time all season. Yale surrendered that post because, you know, the Tigers are clearly the deepest team in the conference right now. Was Chris Christie at the game?
Yes, he was.
I heard rumors to that effect.
I think he was. I think, we were talking before the game about the Republican debate being tonight. I guess he had somewhere, he can go to those games now that he's not in the race. But, you know, I think that when you've got someone like Spencer Weiss, for example, who can stuff the stats, I mean, I think he had like, I don't know, seven rebounds, three assists, something like that, against Yale, you know, that's what's going to happen. You know, if you're Yale, you can't shoot 12 three-pointers, make one of them at Jadwin and think you're going to win. That's the same challenge that Columbia faces this weekend. It really comes down to who's hotter from deep in all of these matchups with the big three teams right now. And, you know, Princeton won that one, Yale lost it.
So I guess I want to kick it to Ian in a second, but I do want to ask you, Mike, you say it's a question of who's hotter from deep. Why aren't the Bulldogs are built to win inside with Justin Sears and Brandon Sherrod? Are you saying that that's not going to be enough for them? If there's a third game between Yale and Princeton, that's not going to be enough to win?
That's a fascinating question. Yeah, I mean, I think that if it is, especially against Princeton, no, I don't think that's going to be enough to win. You know, I just got a question here from Basketball by the Numbers that kind of fits into that. Do you think Yale can win a playoff rematch without Jack Montague? And we're probably going to get into that in a second. But in terms of the shooting, yeah, I mean, if you're shooting 1 for 12 or even 3 for 12 or 4 for 12, Yale barely beat Princeton in New Haven after shooting, like, what, north of 60% from deep?
60%.
Yeah, 60% from deep, 60% from closer as well. I don't think that it's going to be enough to just ground and pound with Justin Sears' off-kilter shots in the lane and Brandon Sherrod's high-percentage stuff. Yale is very good, the best easily in the conference, at getting those inside looks, and that is indeed their foundation, as you hint, Peter, but it's still not going to be enough against an offense that is equally efficient from throughout the floor as Princeton is. Princeton, now with Jack Montague out of the picture and Yale as a team struggling from deep right now, Princeton has more shooters, and it's going to come down to, okay, you know, can you shoot it from deep? You're not going to have games if you're Yale like you did against Penn where you can be cold from deep and get away with it. That's not going to work against Princeton, and it's arguably not going to work at Levian in the season finale, regular season finale either. It's just not.
All right, so I want to bring Ian in here to look at this a little bit from the Yale side. Do you agree with what these guys have been saying about Yale's performance? Are you as discouraged by this result? Because we kind of, on the show last week, said that this was a game Princeton was likely to win given their home court advantage. Did you see this as a big disappointment or something that was foreseeable?
I don't know that those two are mutually exclusive. I didn't think that Yale would win on Princeton's home court. I also was disappointed in the way that they lost. I know after Princeton sucked the life out of Columbia, you became pretty much resigned to the inevitability of a Princeton title, and I fear that I may be going that way as well.
Wait, are you also on a team Princeton has made a deal with the devil? Because I want this to become a thing so badly.
Now, I'm not going to explicitly join that team because I try a little bit to stay objective here, but I do think that Princeton is the favorite to take the title now. After talking all year about how this was Yale's race to lose, I've switched sides after seeing that game. And I want to talk a little bit about the question that you just posed to Mike about Yale's front court. And, you know, this is the best front court in the league, Sears and Sherrod. You know, why do we think that Yale can't beat Princeton with that front court? And my answer to that is that, you know, the Princeton front court's pretty good, too. It's, in my opinion, not as good as the Yale front court, but the Princeton back court, man, this kid Kennedy is something else. I haven't seen a guard like him in the league for a while. I know we've had some great freshmen in the league this year, but he just seems to be on another level. And, you know, what a shooter, what a scorer. And couple his emergence with Jack's absence for Yale, and I just think that the backcourt margin is bigger than the frontcourt margin that Yale has. And so I think add on to that the lack of depth that we've talked about all season on the Yale bench. The Yale bench took 6 shots, 1 for 6 in that game. That's not enough. You know, Sears was limited to 4 field goals. So Princeton's going to lock in. They know that the front court advantage for Yale is where they're going to score. You know, Henderson knows this. He's a great coach. So I'm worried. I don't know what the recipe is for Yale to win right now. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but I think the odds are getting greater, and I'm worried about it. So I'm also worried about this Columbia game. You know, Princeton has it easier coming in as well, with the Bulldogs still having to go to Levian. So I'm a little down right now. I'm a little down, but still hopeful.
Look, you're not nearly as down as I was last week after Columbia
lost
to Princeton.
So. Hard to get that down.
Yeah. Well, I pretty much immediately rebounded, so it's okay. I do want to get into this
weekend.
I do want to get into this question of the guard play, and it's sort of a two-part kind of thing for everyone to talk about. One of which is obviously the news this week that Jack Montague has withdrawn from Yale and won't be playing again this year. Look, we're not going to speculate about what's going on. Just, you know, it's always important to remember for all of us that there's stuff out there that's more important than basketball. And whatever it is for Jack, we hope it's getting better. It leaves a huge gap for the Bulldogs in terms of senior leadership. He was a captain. In terms of shooting, in terms of just minutes per game that have to be absorbed by this otherwise empty bench. I think the key to Yale's season is Mekhi Mason, who is someone who has shown flashes on and off. I have to say, the few times I've seen him live, I have been unimpressed, but I know he's also been capable of some great performances. If Mason can step up, that might be the answer for Yale in a limited number of games left. So, Ian and panel, I want to get your thoughts on those two players.
I'll just hop in real quick. Peter, I think you're right, and I think that's what Coach Jones kind of was thinking last week, because Mason's been great, and they need somebody to step up. And, you know, they put Dallier in there. He didn't have a great performance. He was 2 for 9 against Princeton. Mason took 18 shots against Princeton. So, I mean, Mason taking 18 shots, Sears taking 9 shots. I don't know if this is the recipe for success. I don't know if that's how they drew it up, but I agree they're going to have to rely on Mason. Hopefully not to that extent, but he's going to play a huge role down the stretch here on both offense and defense.
I think go ahead, George. Go ahead, George.
I watched the game at courtside last week, and Mekhi Mason, to me, was the best player on the floor for both teams. We did a pretty good job on him. And that was a key to being able to beat them. I think it might have been a somewhat different story if Montague had given them another option. But limiting Sears to 9 shots and out-hustling the front court after the first 10 minutes was a key to Princeton's success. But Mekhi Mason is the fastest guy in the league. He is a very, very good shooter, and he can pass the ball very effectively. He's just a tremendous player. We were able to harass him into an extraordinary number of turnovers, and that was important. But he was a very impressive player to me, watching him up close and personal. That said, they're not deep, and without IQ, their depth is very suspect. And to go on the road as often as they have to go at this point is very, very difficult. That Montague, we don't know the story there, but the horror of this is the James Jones, who to me embodies everything that's good about the Ivy League. I think he does a great job recruiting. I think he does a great job coaching. Mm-hmm. I think he stands for the kind of things that make this league different from all other levels of college basketball. And if he doesn't make it this year, it'll be a shame. But I have to be honest with you and say I hope he doesn't. But he's a very, very classy guy, and boy, year in and year out, he really gets all he can out of what he has.
Yeah, and I think that the trade-off we're seeing now is you're inevitably going to see more of Anthony Dowyer now that Montague's out of the picture. And Anthony Dowyer gives you, you know, arguably more defense. He definitely gives you more defense than he gives you offense. So it's really going to come down to whether or not his value defensively is able to overcome or give you on that end of the floor what you're missing on the offensive end of the floor with Jack Montague, who's this is a significant loss. I mean, he's the fourth leading scorer on the team, averages 3 assists per game. You know, he's not just effective, he wasn't just effective as a spot-up shooter, but he was a decent ball distributor. Yale's very effectively crisp ball movement all season has, you know, partially hinged on, you know, Montague and what he's been able to do in the wings. You know, I don't know where Anthony Dowyer necessarily fits into that. That remains to be seen. Where he's going to have to prove he, you know, can really fit in is on the defensive end of the floor. That's where he's, you know, why he didn't get more minutes. Maybe he wasn't, you know, quite as polished there to begin with. But this is where he's going to have to prove his mettle. And now, what was already a not very deep backcourt is certainly even thinner now. I think Mekhi Mason can certainly step up to the plate as far as, you know, carrying this team. I know you don't want him taking twice as many shots as Justin Sears, but he can be the focal point of this offense down the stretch and carry Yale to, you know, to where they need to go, particularly if he's shooting well from deep. Again, that ties into what we talked about before. A lot of that's on Mekhi Mason, you know, being hot from deep and from everywhere on the floor, being aggressive, not getting into foul trouble, because if Mason gets into foul trouble, you know, honestly, I don't think there's a contingency plan there that would work. So yeah, it's going to come down to Yale's backcourt one way or the other, whether or not it can, you know, kind of reverse some of this negative momentum right now.
Michael, Mekhi Mason reminded me a lot of Zach Rosen in his prime. They were very similar in that they were so active, so hard to guard, could pass the ball really well, and in the clutch situation, could make the shot. Very similar players to me. Maybe that's
because
they hurt us. They hurt us bad.
Well, Mekhi's—he's only a sophomore, so he's still got room to grow into that kind of role. Yale fans should hope, but by his senior season, he's got more, more help around him offensively than Zach Rosen had, but. Yeah, I mean, I think I have no qualms about Mekhi Mason doing what needs to be done.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, as I think we've more or less wrapped up our Yale-Princeton summary. Take a quick break. We'll be back with news from the other set of travel partners last weekend. Quite a bit going on there, too, so stay tuned.
You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com.
All right, welcome back to On the Vine, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com. I'm Peter Andrews, joined by Mike Tony, Ian Halpern, and George Clark. Let's shift gears a little bit. With 2 weekends left in the regular season, last weekend we saw four teams eliminated officially from contention for the Ivy League title. Penn, fun fact, still alive. If they win out and every other team loses out, they would force a playoff with both Yale and Princeton. Actually, if Princeton loses out, it would be just Penn versus Yale. That's not going to happen. The teams that are officially out, of course, are Brown, Dartmouth, Cornell, and my personal favorite, the Harvard Crimson, who were officially eliminated from contention for the Ivy League title on Friday night by the Columbia Lions in Levy and Gymnasium in a thorough beatdown sort of fashion. Even if Columbia doesn't win the league this year, I will be content with knowing that we were the team that drove the final nail into Harvard's coffin. So there will be a new title, a new representative in the tournament for the first time in years. And yeah, I want to talk about that Columbia-Harvard game, the Columbia-Dartmouth game as well. Coming off a very difficult weekend, a difficult result against Princeton, there's some question of whether Columbia would be able to hold serve and pull themselves back into the race. And they have, you know, they did so. They struggled a bit against Dartmouth in the first half, pulled it out with a monster second half. They played a very good game against Harvard and, again, pulled away in the second half. A real consistency to their performances that I haven't seen all the time. And I'm going to throw it to Mike for some analysis, and we're going to talk about Mauro Lowe a little bit later. But, you know, Columbia, I looked at the numbers. Columbia is 15-3 in their last 18 games. And if Devin Kennedy's shot is 6 inches to the right, they're 16-2. This is actually a pretty hot basketball team. Did you see that over the weekend?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, Kyle Smith has the luxury of being able to, you know, go big or go small, whether he, you know, what do you do with Jeff Kobe, what do you do with Luke Petrasek, you know, there are a lot of... Well, we can get into that, but as far as, you know, the heat of this program coming into the most crucial weekends here, there are a lot of options with this team. You know, Mauro Lowe, I think he's still flying under the radar, the league radar. Now, he was player of the week this week, I understand, but I still don't think, even among Columbia fans, I don't think
you know what it took for him to be player of the week this week? All he had to do was hit a 60-foot shot at halftime of the Harvard game.
It makes look like the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it was number four top play on SportsCenter. He also, there was a GIF floating around of him mercilessly destroying a few Dartmouth players' ankles. But yeah, the full court bomb was really something.
Yeah, it was just done in the most nonchalant manner, too. Just kind of threw it up, banked it in, walk off for halftime. It was a nice piece in the Spectator today that kind of parallel lined him with Jamal Crawford, which is interesting. Interesting comparison there with styles of play. He seems to look up to Jamal Crawford, so, you know, good for him. But yeah, this team is very hot right now, and that's why I think, as we were saying pre-broadcast here, that I fully expect Columbia to make a real go of this at Jadwin. Columbia's proven the last couple of years, even last season without Rosenberg, Mullins, that they don't have an issue getting hot at Jadwin, or at the very least, winning at Jadwin the year. 2 years ago, it was a more low-scoring effort. But, yeah, I mean, I think this with Columbia, when it is deep and when it's got the interior defense that has sparked that, you know, this 18-game, you know, stretch that they're on right now where they're 15-3, if they can get that going, then they're going to be in good shape. All they've got to do is try to, with the Lions, I do notice sometimes that they can get a little hand checky. Front court is susceptible to getting into foul trouble. It's well documented that, you know, Isaac Cullen fouling out changed things against Princeton a couple of weekends back. He's been very crucial in terms of the defensive glue of the backcourt in particular as a stat stuffer on both sides of the floor. But, yeah, I mean, this team is really hot right now. I think they're flying under the radar since they're still taking a backseat in the standings to Yale and Princeton. And there's a reason why, you know, the top three teams in the league have not lost to any of the other five, because they're in a class of their own, and that class most certainly includes Columbia.
I would like to chime in as resident advanced stat troll to say two things. One, and this is kind of what George was getting at earlier, the top two teams in the league are actually undefeated against the other six, right? Let's not forget that. So is it a top three or is it a top two plus one?
Because I can hang up on you, Ian.
Pete, hear me out. 15-3 in their last 18. Best win? Anybody? Best win for Columbia in their last 18 games? NJIT. NJIT at home, number 185.
See, I count the Princeton game as a win, so.
You'd have a different race if that was the case. I wish you were right for my team's sake as well. But, I mean, they're going to be 9-point dogs, maybe 10-point dogs at Princeton. KenPom has them as 9-point dogs. Do I think they can win? Yeah, I do think they could win, but I don't think they're going to win. I think this is a Columbia team that's pretty even with Princeton on the offensive end and a level below on the defensive end. And we'll see if they can put it together for 40 minutes, but I fear that Friday will be the end of the Columbia title run.
See, I will say, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me. I don't know about anything about stats. But I do think I think that just looking at, like, who's the best team they beat in that stretch, I don't think it accounts for the growth that they've made over the course of the year. I do think that, you know, for example, if I recall correctly, so the three losses in that stretch, Stony Brook, Yale, and Princeton. Stony Brook game, they had the game seized in the first half and collapsed defensively in the second. Haven't really seen that much since. The Yale game, Yale beat them fair and square, although I'll note they shot 70% in the first half in that game. And then Princeton, you know, Columbia, by, like, you know, they didn't win, but they played well enough to win. They were one bad on-court decision away from walking away with the win there. And I do think that if you look at the problem with Columbia teams in the past has been that they have struggled to take care of inferior opposition, and they haven't done that in league play. They easily dealt with, you know, Penn, Brown, Cornell. Not always easily, but they haven't required miracles to win any of those games, with the exception of the Harvard game. So I think it's an open question as to whether, you know, it's a top two or a top three. The easiest way for Columbia to prove that it's a top three is to beat Princeton this weekend. And it's certainly possible. Maudo Lowe is getting hot at the right moment. I do want to just point out, because I was reading the game notes, with 8 points this weekend, he will move up to third all-time on the Columbia scoring charts. He's already in first place in three-point field goals made by 70, so that's pretty good. Grant Mullins is playing really well. I think Alex Rosenberg has figured out how to fit his game into the rest of the team. Isaac Cohen has looked sharper. And Jeff Kobe has also really come on. So I think there's some ups and some downs there. But I think the line Princeton plus 8 seems intuitively very wrong to me. The game is in Jadwin. So
if you look at it from our perspective, Caruso, Cook, and Weiss disappeared at Levian. They really did. If you think they're going to disappear tomorrow night, I think that's a big mistake. I think they will play well. Yale scored 63 points against Princeton. Defensively, we're coming into our own. They scored 19 more points in New Haven than they did in New Jersey. That's very significant. And Princeton, we talk a lot about their offense, and you need to talk about their offense because they have four double-figure scorers every night, and it's not always the same four people. They go nine deep. Anderson has done a very, very good job of putting together this team to play in the Ivy League. I just don't think they're going to those three players, and Amir Bell really didn't have a good game in New York either. I don't think those four players are going to do the same thing tomorrow night. I'm not saying Columbia can't win.
Do you think that Pete Miller is going to go off for 25 again? Because if he doesn't do that, the game is not even close.
He scored 20 and he had 13 points. Or, excuse me, 13 rebounds. And no, he's not going to do that again. But I really don't think he's going to need... We're not going to need that from him tomorrow night. I could be wrong, Peter. And frankly, if Columbia can beat Princeton tomorrow night, they absolutely can beat Yale at the end of the season, and we'll be looking at a three-team playoff. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think that scenario is the best hope for Yale. I really do, because I think Columbia can beat Yale anyway.
I just don't. I'm sorry to say, I just don't buy the. Like, I watched the entirety of that Columbia-Princeton game, and I think that. I thought that Columbia played maybe 80% of their best game that day, and I guess I'm finding it hard to have watched that game and come away with the takeaway that Princeton is far and away a superior team. They won that game because they managed to get Isaac Cohen to finish.
I'm not saying they're far and away superior. I'm saying that at home they're going to play better than they did in New York, and don't forget we have made a deal with the devil.
Well, that is something I'm trying to forget about. You know, the thing is, I'm like, we have to talk when we're talking about stats and numbers and all this stuff. We have to assume that the devious hand of Lucifer is not floating around in there, because you can't see him in the numbers, but he's there.
You can see him in Devin Kennedy.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he wasn't Devin Kennedy. It should be quite a game. It really should be quite a game. I do want to I want to turn away from this for a second and talk about Harvard, because one of you mentioned a few minutes ago. No, this isn't going to be me ripping on Harvard, although rest assured I would love to. No, actually, Harvard is in a rare position where I would like them to do something good. You're right. The top three teams have not lost to any of the bottom five. The top two teams are not lost to any of the bottom six. Harvard plays Yale on Friday night in Payne Whitney. Harvard plays Princeton next weekend at some point. I don't know the schedule off the top of my head. Harvard has a chance to impact the race, too, because if they play at their peak, if they can get somehow to the peak they were at during non-conference, when everyone was falling all over themselves to put them into a four-team race, which of course never materialized, you know, they could make some noise here. And I'm curious. Obviously, they lost at Columbia. They put on a terrible first half against Cornell, and then a raucous comeback to win that one. And we'll talk about Bill Courtney in a few moments. Is there any chance that Harvard has one last act to play before the end of the season?
Well, they have done better in New Haven against Yale in the last few seasons than they have in Boston, which is interesting. You know, I think the last weekend was a pivotal one for Tommy McCarthy, which David Tannenwald chronicled well for Harvard Magazine. Tommy McCarthy really coming to his own to pull out that miraculous comeback in the final 8 minutes or so at Cornell. You know, if Tommy McCarthy can start creating or can continue rather creating more off of the dribble, and kind of creating some perimeter presence and some slashing presence that Zayna can play off of, then yes, I think it's interesting that Zayna had only played 25 minutes, I believe, in that game against Cornell, and sat some of the way down the stretch there, with I think Tommy Amaker kind of hinting that he's not been up to par defensively. But I think that, you know, if Edosunwan can get the kind of touches he needs and, frankly, get the minutes that I think he deserves, since he has been a force defensively, and, you know, you get hot, McCarthy's in driving, you get Corey Johnson locked in. Yeah, I think they can, you know, I don't think they will, but I think of any of these, you know, bottom tier teams remaining, I think, you know, Harvard is probably more poised to pull that off than anybody else. I think the ceiling with them is still higher than a Dartmouth, clearly, for example, even at this stage, than, you know, coming up to these games where they can play spoiler. So yeah, I don't think they will, but I think they can make things interesting against a Yale team that is at a crossroads in their season right now. Sure.
I think they can make things very interesting against Princeton too. We did not play Edosunwan. He was not in the lineup when they came down to our place. But we have to go up there. It's a huge, tough road weekend, Dartmouth and Harvard. So that's clearly a hurdle that's going to be difficult to overcome. And Michael, I think you pointed that out in your summary. You suggested that Harvard game might be the toughest game remaining on Princeton's schedule. I hope you're right. We can't look past tomorrow night, but Harvard could be a real problem for us next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with that. I also agree with Mike's thought that this is probably the team most likely to be spoiler. You know, Harvard shoots a lot of threes, consistent with the high-variance team. We saw what they could do earlier this season against BYU, keeping it close against Oklahoma. Now that Zena's back, you know, they're a full team. We saw how really horrible and disjointed they looked without him. But with him back and with him getting more minutes, I do think it's possible that they could play the role of spoiler. I'll go out on a limb and say that they win two of their last four. Penn and Brown.
It's two.
I don't think they'll pull it off, but I think if anybody's going to do it, it's probably them to beat Yale or Princeton.
So then the other half of this last weekend, which I alluded to, Cornell laying another pair of. I don't know what the best way to put this is, so I won't even try. A complete and utter collapse down the stretch to Harvard. Do any of you think that Cornell will have the same coach next year that they do today?
No. I think he's done.
No,
because it's been a disastrous back half of the season for them.
Yeah, promising first half.
And that's part of the problem,
right?
Is the expectations did go up. I mean, Cornell was projected to finish last in the league, and after they had a, you know, promising non-conference, you know, they actually got to 500. They beat Siena. You know, they looked like they had it together. Then they, you know, they played Columbia somewhat tough, and they didn't win, but. The travel partner back-to-back to open league play. They looked decent. Matt Morgan, you know, solidified himself then. Then they did the road sweep of Harvard and Dartmouth, and then nothing. Then absolutely nothing.
Hatter came back. You know, Hatter came back.
Hatter came back, yes.
It was weird.
That was addition by subtraction, frankly.
Yeah, he's not 100%.
Well. He has a tough time fitting in. They need two basketballs with Morgan there. They don't know how to play together, and I don't know that they ever will. They need more help. That game at home to Harvard,
yeah,
that finishes Bill Courtney.
It seems to me that it does seem like Cornell, you know, sometimes you fire the coach because that's the simplest thing to do, but I do feel like, you know, Cornell's been getting the players.
I agree.
Cornell
with that
had,
too.
You know, Sean Miller, they've had Matt Morgan, Robert Hatter, I don't like him very much as a basketball player. I'm sure he's a fine human being. But you know, they've had talent. Devin Harris, you know, guys like that.
They've had talent exit too.
And right? That's what I mean, is they've either had talent get injured or talent exit. The injuries are Nolan Kressler. Injuries are linked, I think, to Bill Courtney more than anything else. This does seem like a good candidate for, you know, a young, smart coach to take over and try to do something else with a program that has been very much stuck in neutral for many years now.
Yeah, and it's not something that I don't think anyone is saying lightly. I mean, this is a guy's job on the line, several assistants, you know, the direction of a program, but it's clearly not working out. You know, Bill Courtney has stuck hard and fast to this very up-tempo style, this kind of frenetic pace, and on offense, though, it's rapid stagnation is what it is. You've got a lot of ball movement that's not actually going anywhere. You've got a lot of players that aren't making any meaningful movement, really. They just don't have the post presence. Robert Hatter likes to kind of drive, throw his body out there and see what he can get. Matt Morgan is a truly legitimate talent, but you know, even he playing hero ball, firing up 28 feet shots isn't gonna do it. The irony is, I heard that Bill Courtney, you know, was extended for this year. You know, he could have exited after last season, which would have been the season after they went 2-26. It also would have been a season when, you know, hey, you've got Steve Donahue still out on the market at that point, so you never know. But this is clearly the program's at a crossroads right now, and they're going to have to try to get somebody in who is a tactician, I think. And I've seen this. This is, you know, people are indicating this elsewhere. I don't think it's hard to see what Cornell needs right now. Everyone's saying the same thing. You know, they need to make a change. They need to raise the basketball IQ of this team, get a post presence, and stop the roster upheaval that seems to plague this team season after season.
Michael, they extended him for 1 year. That to me told the story.
Yeah.
How do you build a case if you're Bill Courtney and you go into the AD's office at the end of this year? How do you build a case for another chance? Mm-hmm. I think you gave him a year to be fair, and he blew it. It's not a happy situation, that's for sure. But you can't go in there and blowing a 20-point lead in the second half at home to Harvard in a down year and say I need more time.
Well, and that followed several blowouts against Princeton and Yale, and also looking flat for most of the game against Dartmouth at home and a loss. It's just adding up.
So Cornell probably coaching change. We have not seen one. We didn't see one last off season. I want to ask Ian, because we actually have not done much Brown talk on the show.
I thought this was going to happen
at all, because Brown is the most. I won't even start there. Have you heard any... So that Brown... I wouldn't necessarily say it's been a disappointing season because I don't think expectations were high. But on the other hand, we have seen a lot with transfers in and out, with people leaving the program. There's been some question about the future of Mike Martin. Anything you can tell us about what your sense is on that program right now?
Yeah, I'm not as clued in as I have been in the past, so I haven't actually heard anything. But I do think if they lose this last four, and they might, I mean, they have two at home against Harvard and Dartmouth. You probably think they get maybe one of those. But if they lose these two, then they go to Columbia and Cornell. If they lose all four, then you finish in last place at 2-12 with 9 losses to close the season, no momentum, not much in terms of recruiting to look forward to in the way that Harvard has, you know, a top 20 class coming in next year. Nothing like that in Providence. So I don't know. I think it depends a lot on the state of his contract, like what's remaining with his contract. I don't actually know how many years he has left. But if they need to make a decision on bringing him back or not, I was just thinking the same way you were talking about Courtney making a case. What kind of case does Martin make? This is not a program you could call on the rise right now. As you said, you've got a lot of kids coming in, a lot of kids going out. If you didn't bring it up, I was going to bring it up because I think it's possible we see two coaching changes. I know I said earlier in the season that I didn't think that would happen, but I also thought this Brown team would be a little bit better. So I don't think it's out of the question. I think that seat's pretty hot.
Yeah, I mean, I want Brown to do well. Among other things, my sister goes to Brown. I want her to be watching a halfway decent basketball team when she's sitting there with a marching band. And it hasn't come together for them at all, and I think it's with them it's a different question than with Courtney, because I do think the problem is with there seems to be a discontent at the heart of that team. I don't know what it is, but they seem to be less than the sum of their parts, and they seem to keep shedding talented players. Leland King leaving in the middle of the season last year, and someone this year who transferred back to Florida Atlantic after barely
Fuller,
a semester.
The twin.
Yeah, and yeah. His twin's on, like, how bad can it be if your twin is on the team and you won out? So I think those are the two situations to watch, and I would think if moves are going to be made, they'll be made quickly, because the frenzy to get a new coach in, to get someone qualified, there will be plenty of young assistants out there who are looking for their first head coach job, which I think is what both Cornell and Brown will be in the market for. And
yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if they let Mike Martin go after year four and, you know, kind of a young team. But the program isn't where it needs to be. The defense is easily the league's worst. You know, you don't have the high caliber of recruiting there that you see elsewhere. You know, when you make a change in the coach, you want to see a change in culture. You want to see, you know, an uptick in recruiting. You know, that's why Penn made the move it did last season. But, you know, with Mike Martin right now, you know, you do have a lot of people leaving the program here and there, and it, you know, that starts to add up too. The thing that can offset that is winning, and at some point you've got to do that meaningfully.
All right, so we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. Let's move on. Let's move from the sad talk about people losing their jobs to the even sadder talk about Princeton's inevitable sweep of this coming weekend. This is the portion of the show where we do our predictions. We've already talked a little bit about this Columbia-Princeton matchup, so I don't feel the need to rehash it in great detail. But I will start with George. If there's anything you want to say about the weekend for Princeton, and then if you could give me one prediction on any topic of your choice for the next 3 days.
I predict a sweep for the Tigers this weekend. I think they're going to hold serve against Columbia, and I think they'll do really well against Cornell. I think it's an inevitability now. And I'm sorry, Peter, to have to say that.
You're like plugged into this devil connection, aren't you? Like,
I certainly am.
You've been told.
And if that's what it takes, I'm happy to sign on.
See, this is the thing, is like, I get that the moral of every, sorry, brief tangent, the moral of every play, movie, damn Yankees, Faust, all this stuff about, like,
Don't make a deal with the devil. The devil versus Daniel Webster. Don't make a deal with the devil. I don't know. If I knew who the devil was and I could get Columbia into the tournament, maybe we would have to have a serious conversation on that topic.
Like Google said, don't be evil.
I don't know. Sometimes evil works. Ian Halpern, what are your thoughts on the upcoming weekend?
Well, if it wasn't clear from my earlier comments, I think that we will officially go to a two-team race after this weekend. I hope I'm wrong. It's more fun with three. But
the two teams are going to be Columbia and Princeton, to be clear, right? Yale is going to get swept. And
yeah, swept at home by Harvard and Dartmouth. Keep dreaming. So there's my other prediction. I think Yale will handle Harvard and handle Dartmouth at home, even without Jack. And I'll say Princeton rolls against Columbia, though I'll grant you that Columbia will cover. They will cover plus eight.
You know, I keep threatening. I've threatened all year long to kick people out of these podcasts for anti-Columbia slander, and I'm worried we're going to get to the end without me ever actually doing it. So you're close. Consider this a yellow card. Mike, what are your thoughts on the weekend?
I see George wants to say something over there. Yeah,
I'm on very thin ice if Ian is.
No, George, the thing is, George gets, George is on kind of a perpetual pass, I think. You're entitled to
it. Great.
Because otherwise, I would cut you off after 2 minutes, and where would the fun be?
Yeah, well, with Princeton connection, he has to be on a perpetual pass, right? Yeah. I predict that Wesley Saunders and Keith Wright.
No, Mike, we're not talking about this. Yeah. We are not talking about this Harvard bull honky.
What a blockbuster.
I know, right? Crimson for Crimson. That's clearly the storyline of the week right there.
Clear, we're talking about a D-League trade, right? The D-League.
Oh, yeah, but you know.
Fan, Peter. That's your next...
I was shocked they didn't give Wesley Saunders the Ivy Player of the Week this week for being traded.
I know, and it's kind of shocking because you can't spell Westchester without Wes, right? So where do you?
I mean, I guess not. That's not the most clever thing you've ever said in your life.
Well, I'm trying to dig my own hole here with this whole hacky cul-de-sac I've dug for myself. No, I mean, I think this is Columbia Princeton. I think it's going to come down to, you know, the final couple of minutes. I don't know how conservative this prediction is, but I think that the line for that game. I agree with you, Peter, that I think it's a little disrespectful to the Lions given their personnel, given their recent track record at Jadwin. So I think I don't know how watch this prediction is, but I think it's going to be a extremely close game down the stretch. And if it's not, then whoever the loser is doesn't deserve to be in the title race after the game is over.
So I do want to just touch on that recent history you mentioned. Last year at Jadwin was the last game of the season. George and I sat together and watched Mauro Lowe go off for 37 points, including an Ivy League record. That's an Ivy League record from those threes made in the game. Not enough to win the game, because basically Princeton did the same thing that they did at Levian, which is to get like 80,000 foul calls in the final 2 minutes and then have Mauro Lowe miss a three-pointer. The year before, Columbia broke something like a 25-year losing streak at Jadwin on a Miko Lyles three-pointer. Anyone remember Miko Lyles? He was a fun player.
Of course.
And so, there's been a history of competitive matchups there. Look, I don't make predictions about Columbia because I, in case it wasn't clear from my incessant rattling on about Lucifer, that I'm a little superstitious. I might not be superstitious, but I am a little stitious. And so I'm not going to make an official prediction there other than to say that you know, I'm kind of at peace either way because last week I gave up on them. Everything else at this point is kind of candy, and I'm just trying to enjoy watching Mauro Loh and Grant Mullins and Alex Rosenberg, who are three really fun basketball players to watch. I'm enjoying watching their last few games, because even if they make the tournament or go to some, they will go to some postseason thing. They've already won 19 games. You know, the maximum number of games left is what, you know, four plus a playoff plus, you know, six games to win the NCAA championship, so maybe 11.
There you go.
Yeah, you got to dream big. But I do want to make a prediction, because predictions are my specialty, so I'm going to predict that I got to remember these other games. I predict that Penn will beat Cornell at home at the Palestra. That one seems like a pretty safe bet, so I'm going to go there. Any thoughts?
Steve Donahue liked that one. I know that.
Steve Donahue's listening to this podcast. Can you throw one to Columbia on Saturday, please? What do you think the odds are that Steve Donahue listens to this podcast? Less than zero?
Can't be less than zero.
Better than most of the other coaches. I'll say that. He seems to be, at least have the appearance of being plugged into social media. So, you know, give him credit for that. Hey, the Palestra's been a tough place for Columbia the last couple of years.
I know. They scored 8 points in the first half there last year, which is, in case you were curious, not a very good number of points.
No, it's been an inexplicable malaise that hangs over Columbia at the Palestra for some reason. These were not good Penn teams they've been losing to there, so I don't know. I wouldn't count that as a automatic W, but I would still count it as a W.
Peter, you know there's a new postseason tournament this year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's in Vegas. So maybe you'll get your Lions out in Vegas.
I was gonna say, if Columbia comes to Vegas, I'll be there. It's only a, you know, my spring break starts. So I don't have class on Thursdays or Fridays, in case you're wondering why we have the podcast on Thursdays.
Tough life.
My spring break starts on that Thursday. That would be, the first day of the tournament. So no matter where Columbia's playing in the postseason, if it's in the NCAA tournament, I'll be there, and if it's in Vegas, I'll be there. Otherwise, I cannot fathom driving across the country to see them. But I didn't know that. That's good to know.
Yep.
Here's one thought, gentlemen. If Princeton can win out, and if Columbia can beat Yale in New York, then the Ivy League men's and women's champions could be crowned in Jadwin on March 8th when there is a men's and women's doubleheader. When Penn comes to town.
Oh, man.
The very thought of that makes me want to vomit profusely.
Well, you know what, George?
I think it should be wonderful.
Penn could win both women's and men's, too, though, George. What about that?
We have not discounted the possibility that Penn is going to win out.
The Penn women could be crowned champions, and the Tigers men could be champions.
No, what I'm saying, as I said earlier, the Quakers have not yet been eliminated, so the Quakers could
Well, here's an interesting thought as well. If there's a playoff between Penn and Princeton on the women's side, and if there's a playoff between Princeton and Yale on the men's side, do they play a doubleheader at the Palestra on the same day? And if they do, would that not be a decided advantage for the Quakers?
Yeah, right.
No, they're going to play the playoff at the True Cathedral of College Basketball, which is Levian Gymnasium.
Yeah,
all right, we've gone 100% off the rails here. We only have a minute left, so it's time to start wrapping things up. I want to say thank you to everyone who has been listening to our weekly nonsense here on the Vine. Thank you, George Clark, for coming on the show. Good luck to your Tigers this weekend. Not that they need it.
Thanks, Peter.
Debating saying something else and choosing otherwise. Ian Halperin, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thanks, Peter. Hopefully it's not my last time if I can avoid that red card.
Well, you know, the slate wipes clean every time. And
thank
you very much to the head honcho of IvyHoopsOnline.com. He's Mike Tony. Mike, thanks very much.
Thank you, Peter.
We'll be online all weekend providing coverage of the various games and such as the eight different games will be going on in the Ivy League. That's at Ivy Hoops Online on Twitter.
I've been Peter Andrews. Thank you very much for listening to the program tonight. It is always fun for us to do. We will be back next week, same time, same place. Until then, enjoy the basketball and have a good night.